But it was 7 months before I was sentenced. So that was the worst, because I didn't leave my home unless I went to a 12-step meeting. I was in a serious depression, but it's still that experience would talk me out of it. I mean, I would talk, you know, and if people at home have depression, they're going to understand this, which you feel it coming on. You feel this darkness coming on, and you're trying very hard to stop it. You're trying to do anything to stop it from just consuming you. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But all of that was the horrible part. I finally get sentenced to prison. I report about a month later.
Can I just stop you the minute? Because I want to get into that. This 7 months mm-hmm. until you're sentenced. Did you ever feel like going back to gamble again?
I it would cross my mind, but I knew that it was not a possibility for me, even if I wanted to. If I walked into a casino, everybody would know who I was. I mean, I know at least one reporter sent people to casinos with my picture. Have you ever seen this guy gambling?
From Tulsa?
From Tulsa.
A Tulsa entity? A paper? Newspaper?
Well, it was in Oklahoma.
Okay, all right. They were looking for you. So because you were spotted, you couldn't do it.
Right.
Do you think if you'd been anonymous, you would have gone back?
Yeah, and again, I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying the events are different if everybody knows who you are.
Yeah.
You know, I was, like a side note, is that while I was in prison, there was a guy there I was talking to, and his parents did not know he was in prison.
Hmm.
I said, how are your parents not knowing you're in prison? Don't they read the newspapers? And he looked at me and he goes, I'm not a senator. He goes, my story didn't ever make a newspaper.
Yeah.
So there is a difference. It's not better or worse. It's just different that when everyone knows who you are, that it...
But that helps you.
It helps, but to stop me from gambling.
Yeah, right.
Because if I were to walk in, everybody knew who I was.
Right.
I walked into a 12-step meeting, and people knew who I was.
Sure.
So it was, there is a lot of, there's a benefit to that. There's a lot of mm-hmm. negative to it,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of benefit.
I could have asked you this later, but now, what do you say to someone who's listening to this, is currently struggling with gambling addiction? What do you say to them?
What I say to people all the time is there's a couple of things, which is number one, this is never going to get better. It's not. You're trying to gamble your way back to making everything right. That's not going to happen. The other part of it is that no one has ever said in the history of the world, you know, if my life could suck and I could be suicidal for 6 more years, I will feel a lot better about getting well. No one's ever said those things. And so there's no reason to kick this can down the road, because what most people will say is, now that I'm sober, or now that I'm clean, or now that I'm gambling free, or whatever the addiction may be, I knew I should have done this 10 years ago. And God, I wish I had. Because when you are not gambling, or when you are not using or drinking, I always say the air is easier to breathe. You're never waiting for the shoe to drop. You're never waiting for somebody to say something to you. And it is regaining part of your life. And now what happens is that, you know, you've got like point A where the gambling starts. You may have had 30 years before that in your life. And then you've got point B where the addiction stops. You may have 30 more years on the other side of that. All the great things that you could have experienced between point A and point B are gone. There's no going back.
Yeah.
But you cannot live in the regret of what you missed.
Yeah.
Because that will take you right back to where you were. Your best thinking got you into your addiction. You know, so you've got to realize that the world is different and you've got to live differently. The combination of all of it, including the prison stay, was a great rectifier of what is important and what is not.
So before you go to prison, what about, how does it affected your family, your son, you're dealing with a grandson? or your circle of friends? Were there those who immediately rejected you, and did some reject you at first and then came back to you?
Luckily, my family, I come from a great family who's very supportive. My parents, my sisters, brother-in-laws, nieces, nephews, all of that, they've been stupendous. My son has been awesome. My grandson, now I will tell you, I'm not going to guarantee you I'm going to get through this without crying, but because in rehab, I would just sob uncontrollably if I had to talk about my grandson. So new people would come, and the other people would say, if you want to see Rick cry, ask him about his grandson. It's really fun to watch, And so, but I called my son, and I said, I had pled guilty. My grandson and I had never had a conversation about this in those months. I just stayed away. I isolated myself from everybody. And my family would have to come to see me because I wasn't leaving the house. So we call him Pi. I said, I've got to talk to Pi. We've got to have some time alone. He goes, come by on Sunday. We're going to watch a soccer game, pick him up. At this point, he's about 17. And I go down and I said, okay, let's go get something to drink. And we step out on the front porch. I had started crying. And I just kept saying, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry if I've embarrassed you. Everybody knows. All of his friends call me Peepaw. He's like, I go, and I'm crying. And he looks at me like, what is wrong with you? And we get in the car and he looks at me and he said, when I look at you, all I see is my Peepaw. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start crying. Mm-hmm. And he goes, and I love my Peepaw.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, that's exactly what I needed to hear. And so I was still trying to drive and couldn't see. So I pulled into a Sonic and I said, I think every Oklahoma family's had one major life conversation in a Sonic drive-in. And so I'm going through everything. And for those of you who are going through whatever you're going through, whether there's addiction or not, I think you need to take the wisdom of my grandson. And I go through all of the options of what sentencing could be. It could be anywhere from this to this to this, because it's not like you see in the TVs, on TV shows. This is a federal system. It's not the state system. There's no worked out, preconceived, plea agreement. The judge tells us what it is, and everyone finds out at the same time. And my grandson looks at me and he goes, well, whatever happens is going to be the best thing that could happen. And I said, how do you know that? And he looked at me and he said, one of the things he said to me was, it's a phrase, because he threw a phrase back at me that I had used with him his entire life, which is, stop overthinking this. And he looked at me and he goes, I'm not overthinking this. And I was just like, jackass, And so he goes, whatever happens to be the best thing that could happen. How do you know that? And he said, because whatever was worse didn't happen. And whatever was better, the judge did not see as an option. So whatever happens will be the best thing that could have happened.
Wow.
And that got me through the next 7 months. Whatever happens is going to be the best thing that could have happened. And it got to be his birthday was coming up. And we'd had the same birthday party for him since he was five, which we went to like a Japanese steakhouse. He was turning 18 and his mom sent out a big text on, we need a head count on who's going to be there. You can only put six people at a table. And I hadn't responded because I didn't want to go. Because I had, every time we'd gone there, I saw people would walk over to the table, and I was just like, I don't want to put him through that. I don't want to deal with it. So, but I hadn't RSVP'd, but how do you not go to your grandson's birthday? So I call him and he was driving. And I'm going to start to cry again. And so I decided to be a complete jerk and make him tell me he did not want me to go. So I said, hey, Pi, your birthday's coming up, my situation, I don't want to embarrass you with your friends, they're all going to be there. Maybe your dad and I can take you out a couple of days later. And whether or not it's a relationship or marriage or girlfriend, boyfriend or best friend or whatever, when you're talking to somebody on the phone and there's a pause, you know the difference, even though it's silence, you know the difference between I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to say and I'm pissed off. He was pissed off. And this was pissed off silence. And he goes, Peepaw, you've been at every one of my birthdays and you're going to be at this one. And I was not happy about that. And then he said, Peepaw, it happened. I said, what happened? He said, you told me June 1st was the worst day of your life. And that was the day the story broke. Reporter on the front yard, the whole nine yards. I said, it was. And he said, "Peepaw, June 1st was over 8 months ago." He goes, "The only reason the worst day of your life lasts more than 24 hours is if you keep living it."
Man.
He goes, "Stop living it."
Wisdom.
And the only thing I could say was, "Damn." It's the only thing I could say. And that's, it's so funny that that one sentence or a couple of sentences can have such a profound effect. He's still the best thing that's ever happened in my entire life.
So did you go to the party?
Yeah. I was there.
Yeah.
I can't say I was particularly happy to be there. I mean, I kept my head down, so people, and I could see people pointing and that kind of stuff, but I was there, and I may have not been happy in the moment, but I will never, ever, ever regret being there.
No.